All right, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So first of all, just before we delve a little bit into the shiur, I was telling my wife as we were walking around, so you understand, of course, how humbling experiences like this are. Because you meet, I forgot the name of our guide. Ehud. Okay, so you meet young men like this who are representative of an entire segment of the population. Individuals who are moser nefesh, who are literally willing to sacrifice everything. At the end of the day, I thought one of the most gripping things that he said was, you know, that little statement about moving the engine from the back of the tank to the front of the tank. And the truth is that expresses the ethos, not just of the army, but of Klal Yisrael. That's called Makayim Nefesh Achas Yisrael Ki'ilo Kiyum Olamale. Right? You save one life, it's as if you save an entire life. So on one hand, we have an army that places an emphasis on life, but yet we have an army comprised of soldiers who are willing to give their lives as well. And that's an incredible idea, because if you think about it, so what is the typical American teenager doing between 18 and 21? So the truth is, you know, if you're from general society, not from the Jewish people, so you're spending those years doing a whole bunch of stuff, but even our own children. So the truth is, Baruch Hashem, we send our children to go study, to go learn, and whatever they're going to do, it's years of yeshiva, years of college, years of preparation. And the truth is, one of the most dramatic things that we miss as diaspora Jewry is the concept of Mesiras Nefesh, the concept of sacrifice. You know, for us, especially in Baltimore, so the sacrifice is maybe we don't have the nicest restaurants we would like. You know, that's our Mesiras Nefesh, or maybe what, but you know, you realize, you understand that children here are the ones who fight the battles, and children here are the ones literally who die in wars, and children are the ones, and I'm mentioning this to you because, you know, I mentioned last night as we were going to Yerushalayim and speaking about Kriya that there's a lot of theological debate about the role of the State of Israel. And the truth is that theological debate often gets very intense. Is the state a good thing? Is the state not a good thing? You know, my wife and I were stuck in the middle of a hafgana, of a, I don't know what the right word is. What do they call hafgana? A demonstration, but it's more like a riot in Kikar Shabbos. Yeah, and literally we had to run away from policemen on horseback. It was quite mean. We'll talk to the grandkids one day, Meretz Hashem.
They are starting
to fire. Yeah, so, you know, the role, the state is highly imperfect. That there's no question about. And I don't think anyone will ever say that the state is perfect. And whether you hold that it's the beginning of Messianic redemption or you don't hold, I'm not here to express personal opinions. I'm just here to teach Torah. You can ask me my personal opinions afterwards. I'll be happy to share them with you. But one thing is clear, which is we're privileged to have a Jewish army. And one thing is clear, which is that for the first time in 2,000 years, there are Jews protecting Jews, and we are not at the mercy of others for our own personal protection. And that is an incredible zuchus. Whatever you feel about the Medina, or whatever you feel about the role of the state within Messianic redemption, the days that we live in, that it's Jewish boys and girls, it's Jewish men and women who are defending the Jewish homeland. I don't mean Medina Yisrael, I mean Eretz Yisrael, is an incredible thing. But it's also something that is humbling for us, because it requires of us is the following. If we're not being Moser Nefesh, if we're not sacrificing or being ready to sacrifice like they are, we have to find a way to be Moser Nefesh on our own as well. Each of us has to be Moser Nefesh for our Yiddishkeit, for our people, for our Judaism in some way. We're not called upon to make these same type of sacrifices. But it has to humble us a little bit when we recognize what the young, literally the teenagers here are asked to do. We have to figure out what we need to do also for our people. But I want to share with you a little bit. If you look on page 5 in your booklet, so there's an incredible sefer. Actually, Rabbi Weinreb gave me a copy of this sefer a couple of years ago. He was by us for Shabbos, and he had an extra copy, so he gave it to me. It's a fascinating sefer called Hamilchama B'Terror. Literally, the war against terror. And what it is over here, it's an entire sefer speaking about the ethics, the Jewish ethics, the halachic ethics of fighting wars on terrorism. And to analyze this concept from a halachic perspective, and if you take a look at number one, it's a fascinating sefer. I'm not going to get into the whole thing now, but he writes over here, he says, Habitui, this is by number one, paragraph Aleph, Habitui Musar Milchama. You know, in the IDF, in the Israel Defense Forces, there's a concept called the Musar Milchama, the Musar of War. What is the Musar of War? He says, Murkav Mishnei Musagim Shalach Ora Sosrim Uminugadim Zelazeh. This phrase of Musar Milchama, right? We're used to Musar. How would you translate Musar? rebuke. So never translate it as rebuke, right? Don't ever do that again, right? That was the last time, right? Because rebuke generally is something that's negative, right? Musar is more direction. Direction, right? You open up, why do you learn Mesilas Yesharim? Why do you learn Sharei Tshuva? Whatever Musar say for you, everybody should learn Musar. Why? Because we all lose our way in life a little bit. See, you need a guide. You need a Mora Derech. You need something to get you back on track. So the Moshe Chaim Letzato is our guide. You open up a Sharei Tshuva, you open up a Chovas HaLavavas, and that's what gets you back on the right track in life. So in the IDF, there's a concept called Musar HaMilchama. So over here, the author writes, those two phrases seem to be inherently contradictory. Why? Look what he writes. Ba'uche tafkidu shala musar lahosef bracha v'tov li'olam va'achva ben abrius. The whole point of musar is to go ahead and increase blessing in life, increase good in this world, and unity between Jews. Tafkidu, or unity between people, it's not just Jews. Tafkidu shala milchama hularos v'larog. Yet the purpose of war is to destroy. The purpose of war is to destroy and to kill. So the point of Musar is to uphold and bolster life, and yet the point of war is to destroy and to kill. Another very important statement is, or another important concept in the IDF is Tar HaNashek. Tar HaNashek literally means the purity of arms, the purity of weapons. This, by the way, came very much to the forefront of Israeli society now, and I'm sure they are going to hear a lot about it tomorrow in Hebron with the episode with the soldier who was now found guilty of manslaughter, of killing the terrorist. Now, again, you have to understand something. We react very viscerally about how can you convict a young Jewish boy for murdering a terrorist. But understand, the strength of the IDF is in the Tar HaNeshek. The strength of the IDF is in the rules of engagement. The IDF is the most moral army that exists on the face of the earth. Now, sometimes that morality handicaps us. I remember when we were here, Viv and I, we were with our family during the Second Lebanon War. And there was, on one of the front pages of the paper, I don't remember, they had just done like a major terrorist sweep in Jenin. And the front page of the picture, I don't remember which paper it was these terrorists that were blindfolded and were handcuffed. And there was an IDF soldier giving them water. It's like, who does that? Now you may say, that's stupid. That's, you know what? They should rot. They should just let them die and just leave them alone. But that's not how our army works. Our army is an army of compassion, even for those who would kill us in a heartbeat. Because that's, by the way, that's not just the army. You know, the Gemara says that the trait of Klal Yisrael is that we are Rachmanim b'nei Rachmanim. Jewish sympathy, Jewish compassion, Jewish empathy runs so deep, not just for our fellow Jews, but for all of humanity. And yes, sometimes it's to a fault. Sometimes we even do it in a way that undermines ourselves. So Tar HaNeshek means that the rifle is not just a mechanism to take life. The rifle has to be a utensil of purity as well. See, right over here, Murkav Mishtei Musagim Shalach Ora Solshim Echad Es Hasheni. But Tar HaNeshek seems to be comprised again of two contradictory concepts. HaTar Tara Kol Magamas LaHavi Bracha LiOlam. So the point of Tara, the point of purity, is to bring blessing to the world. And what's the point of the Neshek? What's the point of the weapon? Shaneshek rak zore heres. The weapon brings destruction. So the point that the author is bringing over here is that there are great challenges that come from having a Jewish army, really because we're trying to blend contradictory motifs. There's the musr milchama, there's on one hand the musr of war, musr is to bring life, war takes life, there's the Torah HaNeshek, the purity of the weapon, purity which is to increase life, and the Neshek which is to take away life. See, right here in paragraph Beis, Sheilas has nagos hamusaris patsal, his and the truth is, these moral and ethical complications have become much more pronounced in the later number of years. So he goes on in this paragraph to explain the great difficulties that are faced by a Jewish army. Because the Jewish army, and by the way, you should just know, this is not new to the IDF. Remember again, the Torah in Parshios of Kisese Kisavo speaks about the laws of war. And the Torah gives one simple mandate to the army, and that is, V'haya Machanecha Kadosh. Torah says when you go out to war, the army must be holy. But how do you go ahead and keep holiness when you're asking people to engage in sometimes the worst acts? You know, it's interesting. In Parshas Pinchas, after Pinchas kills Zimri and Cosby, right? He kills a tribal prince. He kills a Midianite princess for engaging in a public act of morality. So what happens? The God says to Pinchas, I'm going to give you a reward. And what's the reward? V'hinini no lo, brisi shalom. So asks the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, why is Pinchas rewarded with the covenant of peace? And he says something absolutely amazing. He explains, because Pinchas had just engaged in an act of bloodshed. And when you have to take life, taking life forever changes you. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Pinchas the covenant of peace, lest Pinchas turn into a hardened soldier. That this is the great, and again, we often focus on the fact that soldiers die in war. But you speak to any soldier and they will tell you that sometimes the greatest collateral damage is having to live the rest of your life with the knowledge that you took life. Right? We take this for granted, that a soldier has to take life. You understand what it means to take... I'll just tell you, when I was in Smicha, we had to go ahead and we had to learn Shechita. Okay, so I learned Shechita. I was already married by then. If I told you, I came home that night and we had to shecht chickens, and I was traumatized by this. I mean, I still ate meat, don't get too worried, right? But again, at least for that night, like it was traumatizing. Why was it traumatizing? Because seeing something that was alive one moment, and then by your own hand was not alive the next, is traumatizing. The idea, taking life is traumatizing. Now that was a chicken, and that was again for a higher purpose of eating that food, another human being, another life. So again, we're just pointing out that over here, the point of this particular paragraph is just to point out this idea, how maintaining a holy army, maintaining Machanecha Kadosh, is so exceptionally difficult because it forces us to reconcile things that sometimes are irreconcilable. Musar HaMilchama, it's hard to find that balance. Torah HaNeshek, it's hard to find that balance. And if you skip a little bit, so if you turn to page 6, this is from the Sefer Tal Chermon. Tal Chermon is written by Rav Aviner. Rav Shlomo Aviner is the rabbi of Beit El. He's also the rav of Ateret Kohanim in the old city of Yerushalayim, in the Muslim quarter of Yerushalayim. So he writes the following. He writes over here, he has a beautiful piece about Yom HaZikaron. And he writes in number 4, I apologize, I did not number these sources, but on page 6 where it says number 4, Hanoflim, he says, those who have fallen. And he writes something so beautiful over here. He says, B'menegina HaKlalit HaSimcha, say in the previous paragraph, he writes the idea that for the first time in 2,000 years, since the founding of the State of Israel and having a Jewish army, he explains that for the first time we have the ability to create a beautiful symphony of melodic music. For the first time, Jews are no longer at the mercy of anyone else. And this is an incredibly important idea, because the truth is, all of us here live in the diaspora, and the truth is, I'd venture to say, all of us are exceptionally comfortable in the diaspora. And the truth is, We now have unprecedented access, right? Following the news, Jared Kushner was just named as the new Middle East peace envoy, right? The Palestinians are even happy about Jared Kushner, which I don't quite understand. But in any event, again, we have unprecedented access. President Trump's son-in-law, right? Ivanka's husband. So again, we have unprecedented access. Whether you like the president or you don't like the president, right? First of all, you should support him because he's our president. But whether you like him or not, there's going to be a Jewish woman by the name of Ivanka who's going to have the president's ear. There's a firm guy named Jared Kushner who's going to have the president. Meaning, it's unprecedented access. You know, Aviva and I were by the White House Hanukkah party this past year. And I said, you know, imagine next year, it's not just going to be a Hanukkah party, but there's going to be a menorah in some of those windows. Meaning, there are going to be people actually lighting the menorah. So whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store over here, it's something dramatic. But at the end of the day, it's not our home. And at the end of the day, it could turn on us on a dime. And I'm not one of these guys falling people, but you saw what happened in the UN. You saw what happens again on the turn of a dime. The country that is our host nation, that is the most wonderful diaspora in the last 2,000 years, can absolutely turn on us in a dime. Now, does that mean we have to run? We shouldn't fling. No, all of us should contemplate Aliyah. All of us should maybe we don't have a 5-year plan. Maybe it's a 25-year plan. Maybe it's a 30-year plan. And by the way, that doesn't even have to be, even if you're not a religious Zionist. This is still the homeland of the Jewish people. No matter what your theological beliefs are, Rav Avinair writes that for the first time since the founding of the state, we have this beautiful melodic chorus of Geula, a beautiful melodic chorus of redemption. But then he says something so beautiful over here. He says, "B'minaginas hakolis hasimcha, yeshnam gam suvim asuvim." His wording here is so beautiful. He says, you know, in this beautiful melodic work of music, There are a few what he calls tragic chords. I don't know if I'm translating in the music world the right way, but there are a few tragic chords. I'm sorry?
Sad notes.
Sad notes, right? He says, "Tzilile kolam shel hayichidim shenafal b'machamos." Those tragic chords are the tragic chords of those who have been lost in the wars for the state of Israel. Bevadai osan hanafashas hatahoros shenifradnu mehem nimtsaus ata b'makom she'in bo roktsim shvalim v'aluvim. Those who have died defending the state of Israel are definitely now in a place when there are no longer any terrorists, there are no longer any enemies, there are no longer anyone who could pursue them. Avalanu eitzav b'atzu b'ladein. But for us, it is sad to live our lives without them. Ulam anachnu nashuv v'nifko shotan. We will go ahead and we will meet them again one day. Kishavim yesh savlanut lechakot. He says something so beautiful over here. Where there is love, there is patience. Anyone who has ever lost a loved one, especially in a tragic way, realizes that the most painful part of loss is recognition that you're not going to get to see that person again. But you know, I should have included this on the sheet. You know where this is most pronounced? By David HaMelech. You know, by David HaMelech, because my portal into this trip is my Tehillim shir, so I should bring something from Tehillim. David HaMelech, you know, writes in the episode after Bathsheba. Bathsheba becomes pregnant. Nathan HaNavi confronts David HaMelech and he says the baby's going to die. And David HaMelech says something. So what happens? David HaMelech is fasting and he's davening. And then he sees, based on the reactions of the people, that the baby has died. And he stops fasting, he takes off his sackcloth, he sits down to eat. And his servants ask him, you know, King, what's going on over here? When the baby's alive, you're fasting, you're davening, and now the baby's dead, and you're acting like everything is okay. And David HaMelech says something so profound. He says, now that the baby has died, there's nothing more I could do. And he says, I realize my son will never come to me. The next time I will see him is when I go to him. And where there's love, there's patience. There's a recognition that we'll always be reunited with our loved ones. Maybe halavai will be zochet that Mashiach will come, and we'll be zochet to see them here. But if not, then after 120, we'll be able to see them wherever they are. So Rav Avinair says, yesh savlanut lechakot. Sometimes as a people, if there's one midah that we have mastered, not on an individual level, but on a national level, it's savlanut, it's patience. We'll wait for however long we have to wait in order to be reunited with those who we love. Rav Avinair says something amazing. You come to a place like this, like Latrun, and you know what's interesting is the wall here starts from 1948. But the truth is, the wall starts so much earlier. The wall starts more than 2,300 years ago with the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. That's where the war starts. Because the soldiers who have fallen since 1948 are just part of a continuum for those who have lost their lives al Kiddush Hashem. The difference is, from 1948, they lost their lives fighting in a Jewish army for a Jewish homeland, which is an incredible zechus, but they don't stand in a vacuum. They're part of that continuum. And Rav Avinair goes on, "Anu yodim shele basof ninatzeach." And here's the amazing part. The amazing part, says Rav Avinair, is that we know, unfortunately, the wall doesn't end. And you know, again, even that wall ends by the Second Lebanon War. That's not the end. There have been losses in the armored corps since the Second Lebanon War, and those losses will continue to go on. But what gives us the courage? What gives us the courage is we know at the end we will succeed. In the end we will be victorious. Anu betuchim shetiskayim hanavua, and one day we will see the prophecy. V'kisesu charbosam la'isim v'chanoseam l'mizmoros lo yisagoi al goy cherev lo yilmudu od milchama. We know that one day we will see the prophecy that they will beat their swords into plowshares, and the time will come where one nation will not lift up against another nation a sword, and they will no longer battle. So again, we understand over here that when you come to a place like this, we understand the great challenges, the Tohar HaNeshek, the Musra HaMilchama, the incredible sacrifices we have to make as a people, not just starting in 1948, but for the last 2,000 years, and we know with a heavy heart that those sacrifices will continue, but we're willing to make them because at the end of the day, we know we will be successful. So I just want to end off with two personal accounts. You know, sometimes when you see large walls of names, you know, it's kind of like when you talk about the Holocaust, and people go ahead, I'll just speak in Mrs. Isby. So, you know, in my family, we have very little extended family because I'm a first-generation American. My mother was born in the DP camps after the war. So for us, the Holocaust was always a very personal, day-to-day reality. But when you think about 6 million, the problem, of course, is that that number is too big. You can't wrap your head around it. So what ends up happening with big numbers is that sometimes they just fall into obscurity. Even this wall, right? Even this wall, when you look at that, it's massive. Sometimes if you really want to feel the enormity of something, you can't look at numbers, but you have to look at the one. So I want to share with you two short pieces. The first one is actually about, it's on page 6, and I apologize that I did not go ahead and include and number this, but this is about Benayah Sarel. Now, I actually chose Benayah Sarel because Im Yirtzeh Hashem tomorrow, we're going to visit his kever. He is buried in the old cemetery of Hebron. So I just want to show you his story. Benayah Sarel, he was killed in Gaza. 26 of Kiryat Arba was killed Friday, August 1st. Major Sarel fell on Friday, August 1st, a few weeks before he was to be wed to his fiancée, Gali. Look what he writes. I apologize for the quality of the print. "You are the pride of life of every Jewish mother," said Sarel's mother. "You are wise, happy, unique, smart, brave, and a hero. You always know what you want. You always knew what you wanted and where you were going, and it was hard to argue with you. All the different people who came to mourn with us on Friday reminded us who you are. There was no one who met you did not touch, especially Gali, who we also loved so much, and they promised you we will take care of her, just as you requested." The mother continued on to tell the last conversation she had with her son shortly before he died. "In this war, we spoke relatively frequently." Now, you have to understand something. You know, when we think about war in America, so we think about Afghanistan, Iraq. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, soldiers drive to war, right? You drive to your staging area, you leave your car there, you go out and you prepare, and then you drive home, and you want to connect with your family, you WhatsApp, right? Meaning, this is how wars are waged in a country that's smaller the size of New Jersey. You go ahead and you drive to the battle. So his mother is saying, "We spoke at 8:30 in the morning, an hour before the horrible terrorists put an end to your life. I spoke with you. You said, 'I'm just going to complete the small mission, and then I can leave. Turn on the coffee maker.' Immediately after the conversation, I thought, what will happen? Even though you always seem to be so immune to death, if you die, will I never be happy again? And immediately I thought that with the help of God, I will be happy just as Benayah was." Benayah's father, Rabbi Shalom Sarel, spoke about his son's unique character. After Operation Cast Lead, Benayah was nominated for a medal. And after almost a year, it emerged that he would not receive it, the father said. "When I called him to lift his spirit, I asked him how he felt. And he said that he was much happier now. He said, 'At first I was angry, then sad. But then I was happy that I am able to give myself to the people of Israel without any intention of honor and glory.' And that is what he did. 'I have no way to try to explain my pain,' said Benayah's fiancée, Gali, in a trembling voice. 'The night before you left, we had a long, upbeat conversation. You said the next day there would be a ceasefire, you'd already be able to call. You promised you would watch over yourself and all of your soldiers. Yesterday morning, I was told that there would be a ceasefire, texted you exactly at 9:30, and I wrote that I hope you're feeling better and how much I love you, but I don't know if you saw it. I want to say thank you for the best 3 years of my life. Thank you for your truth. Thank you for coming into my life and teaching me so much. Thank you for your infinite love, your laughter, and your eyes that will accompany me throughout my life." Turn the page. This is amazing. And again, I apologize that I did not number these. So as you saw, Benayah Sarel was supposed to get married just a few weeks after he was killed. So his friends did something amazing. Look at it's the article on the top of page 7. Friends of an IDF officer killed during the recent fighting in Gaza Strip arranged a banquet for the needy in his memory on Thursday, the same day that the soldier was supposed to be married. Major Benayo Sarel, 26, was an officer in the Givati Brigade who was killed in a firefight in southern Gaza on August 1st after his unit was ambushed by Hamas gunmen during what was supposed to be a temporary ceasefire. Sarel, who was born in Kiryat Arba, was engaged to be married and his wedding had been scheduled for Thursday evening. Following his death, Sarel's friends contacted Karmei Ha'ir, a non-profit organization that helps those unable to provide for themselves, and offered to donate all the gifts they were going to give to the couple to the organization instead, the Kikar Shabbat News website reported. In addition, the group arranged to have a wedding feast for needing people at the headquarters of the Jerusalem-based organization that provides daily free dinner for those who are unable to feed themselves. The tables in the dining room were laid out with a festive spread, and a poster explained that the meal was in honor of a fallen IDF soldier in place of his wedding banquet. However, the poster did not mention Sarel by name, as the organizers wanted to avoid media attention during the event. On a day that joy turned to sorrow, the sound of cheering turned to grief, the poster read. In this act of kindness, find comfort. Incredible idea. And this is the holy, you have to understand something. Benayo Sarel was not some Godel Hador. He wasn't some great Talmud Chacham. Right? He wasn't necessarily someone, again, who accomplished things in the world of Torah. Although, again, he was known to be a Talmud Chacham as well. But he was someone ultimately, again, who gave his life for Klal Yisrael. He was someone ultimately, again, who gave his life for the Jewish people. This is what we come to celebrate, and this is what we come to. I know I'm out of time. Just give me one more moment. One less bathroom break. We'll give up for one more here. Okay. So I'll just share with you one last piece, and with this we'll conclude. So this is from an incredible book, which, by the way, I would tell you is required reading, called A Psalm in Jenin. This is an incredible book that speaks about Operation Cast Lead. And it follows a number of soldiers, again, throughout their time in Jenin. So if you skip down a little bit, the book tells a story about a soldier by the name of Gadi Ezra. Gadi Ezra was also killed in Jenin and was killed just a little while before he was to be married. So amazingly enough, if you take a look at the last paragraph on page 7, say Gadi Ezra's letter to his girlfriend Galit had been discovered in his bureau drawer soon after his death. It struck a chord in the Israeli public and received wide publicity. Rafi read the letter aloud. This letter was read at a memorial ceremony for the soldiers who had died in Jenin. So look what he writes. And again, this just gives you a little bit of a window into the holiness and the purity of these simple young men. My beloved Galit, if this letter reaches you, it means that something has befallen me. This morning I received word that the operation planned yesterday will take place, God willing. I told you that the operation had changed and that it was not what it was originally supposed to be because I didn't want you to worry, my dearest. It was very hard for me not to tell you the truth, but I referred to do so rather than drive you crazy with worry. One can tell a lie for peace, it is taught. That's mucho lashanas of Ne'a Shalom, the Gemara says. You can tell a lie to preserve shalom bayis. That concept comes in very handy. Right? It's permitted to go, not with you, honey, not with my wife, but with other people. One can tell a lie for peace, it is taught. And that also includes the peace of mind of the person that you love more than anything else on this earth. My beloved, I feel that on one hand, there is nothing that I would like more than to be with you, to love you, and to raise a family with you. But on the other hand, there is nothing that I want more than to go on this operation and deal such a great blow to the terrorists that they will never dare perpetrate another bombing or terror attack. Remember again, Operation Cast Lead and Jenin was a response to the Netanya massacre of Pesach. Remember again, there was a terrible terror attack on the first night of Pesach in Netanya. As a result of that, the IDF mobilized a major incursion into Jenin that they will take into account that each time they commit an atrocity, we will hit them in the most painful place possible and will be willing to pay the price. I am willing to be that price. Don't be angry at me, my loved one. But in moments like this, one must be guided by the greater good of the people of Israel. And one needs to deal a blow to evil as if one has no private life. As it is written in the armies of King David, a conditional letter of divorce would be granted before going off to war. My dearest, do not forget, everything is for the best. And if this is what the Master of Universe has chosen, so be it. To us remains the task of accepting it all with love. Everything the Lord does is for the best. Everything is for the best, even this. I promise you that I am in the most wonderful of places, without suffering, without regret. My only sorrow is for those who remain, for you, for my family, for my friends. Spread the good news, my dearest one. Never despair, be only joyous. That is what I ask of you, even if it is difficult. I know that I can ask this of you, because I know well the joy and bliss that radiates from you naturally. Those qualities with which I fell in love. They are what drew me to you when I first laid eyes upon you. My dearest, my beloved, I love you and will always love you. Promise me that you will continue onwards and will not allow stone to triumph. You be the triumphant one. That is what must be. I love you to all eternities and will always be at your side. I share with you these letters, even though they are heartbreaking, not to make us sad, but to give us such incredible pride. This is Am Yisrael. This is Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker. Do you want to know why Klal Yisrael has a beautiful and magnificent and bright future? It's because we have magnificent men who sit in the yeshivas and devote their lives to Torah. And it's because we have magnificent men on the battlefield who are willing to pay the price and be the price for either the eternality of Klal Yisrael. And when we come to a place like this, we must, A, feel an incredible debt of hakarsav, of gratitude, for those who have been willing to pay the price for Klal Yisrael. And we also have to leave here with one simple question. How are we going to contribute to our people? What are we willing to give up? What are we willing to sacrifice? How are we willing to get involved with all of the different needs of Klal Yisrael in order to do our part in ensuring Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker?